Okay, welcome back, everybody. We're about to start our 11:30 ICAT report, so I'm hoping Dave can turbo through it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Omaha. It worked for Manning. I don't know why it won't work for me. All right. Today is an update, and also I have one issue that I have to have the council address today. Actually, there were two, but I'm gonna go without one of them and just do one. An update on ICAT HMS issues, and I'm gonna leave most of this out and cut right to the chase. There's a couple of things I just want to make sure everybody's up to speed on, and then I'm gonna go right to the one issue that really does have to be addressed today. As I'm sure most of you know, but some may not, ICAT is the International Commission for the Conservation of Atlantic Tunas. It's an international commission of 47 nations that meets basically throughout the Atlantic Basin countries. And what it does is it determines the management on the international scale for all the tunas and tuna-like fish, several species of tuna, swordfish, both North and South Atlantic swordfish, and sharks, billfish, they're all part of it. One of the things about hearing aids is that I can't, background noise, just, I can't deal with that. At any rate, the U.S. is a member of ICAT and has been since the beginning. Of all of the species, there are two in particular that are of importance to New England and of considerable importance to New England. One is the western bluefin tuna, and the other one is the northern swordfish. We also have some interest in yellowfin tuna, but that's at a much lower level. The western bluefin tuna supports a fishery that this last year brought in just the commercial landings, brought in $11 million. And the sword fishery was worth $27 million this year. So these are considerable fisheries. And the council has an integral role in their management, something that a lot of people haven't realized in the past. And how does that keep getting turned off? The New England Council has been remiss in keeping up with it over the years from time to time. ICAT is an international body. It operates within this country through the Atlantic Tunas Convention Act of 1975, which is the U.S. law that provides for our management of our domestic fisheries within the rules of ICAT. The Atlantic Tunas Convention Act, ATCA they sometimes call that, has set up two bodies that assist in that management, or actually determine the management. The management itself is handled through the HMS division of NIMS, and there are two. There's one other body called the ICAT Advisory Committee, IAC, and within these two bodies, the councils have a legally required seat. And in terms of its influence on the process, it's what you could also almost consider an Uber seat. I've been told by the people down there that do this that the council seats are considerably more influential than the other seats simply because we represent a large body of people. And as part of that, it's incumbent upon me to make sure that when I get down there and make points that I have the backing of the council. And so that's why I want to be very scrupulous about that from this point on, because it seems that we are going to reengage for a number of reasons. Under the IAC, the ICAT Advisory Committee, we have basically a spring meeting, not counting all the in-between meetings that I don't bother with that we don't have to. We have a spring meeting, which is basically to review the science, stock status, and planning, and then a fall meeting to actually form the advice that we give to the U.S. Department of Commerce on what the U.S. position should be in regards to these fisheries at the annual ICAT meeting. With the HMS species, the HMS division, what they do is they produce rules and regulations for the domestic fisheries. So we've got the international fisheries we're involved with through the IAC, and then the domestic side of those fisheries through the HMS division. The HMS division sets up this the rules and regulations through a fishery management plan that's produced in Silver Springs, and it's called the Consolidated Atlantic Highly Migratory Species Fishery Management Plan, along with its amendments, which come at regular intervals. At the current time, they're working on Amendment 7, and that's where we now have a problem specifically in New England, because it makes a considerable change to New England, and their preferred alternative, in fact, is very damaging to New England. So that's what I want to go into today. There were two issues. One was on the ICAT meeting in November this year and what the council's position would be. I'm going to defer that one until the April or possibly even the June meeting, but I would like to have a determination from the council where they want to go with the bluefin tuna fishery and the sword fishery. The sword fishery has become very successful. The management has worked very well. They're not overfished. Overfishing is not occurring. And the United States over the last 7 years, due to the efforts of the industry itself, have put themselves back into the game. The landings of swordfish this year were the highest that they've been in many years, and they've been steadily going up to the point where now we have a viable sword fishery in this country. It was nip and tuck for a while because the way ICAT works, use it or lose it. And since our industry had declined so much, when the tax suddenly started going back up, we were in danger of losing it, and it was a considerable battle to make sure that didn't happen. But the issue today is the bluefin tuna. And in the Amendment 7, which is under consideration right now of the Consolidated Atlantic HMS FMP, they are attempting to reallocate quota among the domestic categories, among other things. The comment period has been extended, and we need to get on this now. They've made a change that is not going to be that we need to try to counter. Just to give you an idea of what they're doing, the 2013 bluefin tuna quotas divided into six areas is the general quota was 435 metric tons. That's the one that most New England fishing is done under. The harpoon quota was 36 tons. The purseine quota was 172 tons. The angling quota is 182 tons. That takes up the small fish and the recreational catch. The longline quota was 46 tons, and the trap quota is a little under a ton. The longline quota is where we have the problem, because ICAT recently changed the regulations to require that countries take into account as part of their quota all the discards. Discards now have to be counted against your quota. So what was done was a longline fishery, this is the swordfish longline industry, has got a considerable discard bycatch of bluefin tuna. So there's also a set-aside of 25 tons. That set-aside was applied completely to the longline fishery in order to take up part of that. But their discards are considerably above that. So this year, what they've done is they've increased the tonnage being allocated to this longline fishery, from 74 metric tons. This is for the next year, to 137 metric tons, at the expense of all of the other fisheries. Now, there's a number of problems with this. One is that it takes fish directly away from the New England fishermen. And the other thing is that it violates a long-standing pattern or a practice of keeping the quota percentages the same over time. In fact, that's been in place since 1982 when we were in virtually a moratorium on bluefin tuna fishing. As the times got better, the additions to the quota, the quotas were done so that nobody won or lost. There were no winners or losers. As long as things were going up, the pattern, the relationship between them stayed, the ratio stayed the same. What's going to happen here now is that we're going to have a probably close to 200 tons, is going to be redirected toward the longline fishery to make up their for their dead discards. Now, there are a number of things that we need to say here in our response to this. One is that, and these are my projections now, you people can do this any way you want to. To solve this quota problem, National Marine Fisheries Service can amend to the minor amendment rather than this big amendment they want to do to allow closing the pelagic gear once a category has exhausted its quota. The problem with that is that, and what gets us into a political battle is because these are the guys that are catching the swordfish, which now are in such good shape. So that's one problem. But the bigger problem is that what they're doing is they're taking it away from all the other users. And that's just simply not fair. So that's the preferred alternative right now. And we need to send a letter to counter that. I'm trying to get through this as quickly as I can without going into all the little details. There are a number of other things that by doing it this way, they also reward wasteful practices. What it does is, the other thing it does is it takes the second lowest of the categories, the quota categories, and makes it the second highest, which is profoundly unfair. And it violates a longstanding policy. So what I would like to do is to have the approval of the council to construct a letter to go to HMS with our strong disagreement with this way of doing business. Now, having said that, there's also a longer-term way to account for some of this, and that has to do with what I was going to go into today on the second issue, and that was the overall bluefin tuna quota. In the interest of saving time, because we're so far behind, I'm going to not take up that up today. But that's a second possibility. But that would not come until next year, and that would come maybe and maybe not at the regular ICAT meeting. So that's where we stand right now. What I need is to, if the council is in agreement, I need to have a letter sent from the council to the HMS, Division of Highly Migratory Species, objecting strongly to their reallocation on the basis of dead discards. So how do I do this, Terry? You want this by motion or acclamation or?
I want to see if anyone has any questions first.
Yeah, okay.
Terry?
So I just want to make sure I get it right. So
yeah. I try to get through it as quickly as I could.
So you want to send a letter saying that basically the long line shouldn't get that discount?
No, what I need – no. I don't want to get into that kind of a, frankly, pissing match. It's not necessary. What we have to do is we have to ask them to not use that as their preferred alternative in the Amendment 7. But you're doing basically the same thing, but I don't want to start making this a gear versus gear kind of thing. We just have to send a letter that says that we object to their using the current preferred alternative. And there are other alternatives that are better. And frankly, I don't have an idea of, you know, which way we should go there. But just please don't use that alternative. Objecting to the alternative.
Mary Beth.
I don't see how we can do that. We don't have the alternatives in front of us. We don't know what the impacts are to any particular gear of doing that. And it just doesn't seem appropriate in those circumstances to write a letter.
Okay. What I would like to say is that this was something that, since we haven't been involved with HMS, I got blindsided by this because I haven't been going to the meetings. But we do have the representative of the American Bluefin Tuna Association, Rich Ruway, and most of you know him, who is really up on this stuff, and he can assist with this.
I want to remind the council we did have a presentation in September, and Tom, you have more details.
Well, that's all I was going to say. If you recall, the regional office sent up a person that gave us a briefing on all of the highly migratory species Amendment 7 alternatives at September. That's still on our webpage under the September Council discussion if you want to just refresh your memory.
Yeah, that was a meeting I missed.
Doug.
Well, I was just going to see if someone could refresh my memory on whether there was any measures within that Amendment 7 to try and encourage the reduction of dead discards in the longline fishery, because to me it's even more of a concern if we're giving them extra quota to accommodate for this, but there's no measures that if there aren't any measures to try and encourage and incentivize reducing those dead discards. So that's a question in general, if anybody remembers.
Tom, you have an answer for that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure I would characterize these as incentives to reduce dead discards, but the plan does include some options for improved reporting requirements, including electronic monitoring for the longline fleet. They may be implementing electronic monitoring on the longline fleet so that they can audit the catch data. They're also talking about enhanced VMS units. I really don't know what that means, but to try and get a better handle, that's in the purse seine fishery and some of the other fisheries.
Mike?
Yeah, I share the concerns that are implied in Mary Beth's comment about that this is a pretty complex issue, and I feel it would be difficult for us to come up with a definitive view with such little time for it. I would be very happy to hear from Rich Rouet, for example, but even then, I just feel there's so many complexities and diversity of views on this, and I mean, the issue of moving to the ITQs and the longline fishery is a complex one with the electronic monitoring. There are interests in this region, not only in the bluefin, but also in the swordfish fishery, and we should be taking those interests into consideration. There's also a lot of history. The fact that dead discards are now required to be taken into account in quota at ICAT is really not a change for the U.S., because the U.S. has reported its dead discards for the last 15 years or maybe 20 years, and they have been taken into account. It's essentially a measure that makes the other countries also take account of dead discards. So that, in fact, what's happened in the longline fishery is there have been frequent reallocations within year to cover those discards. So I guess my bottom line is this is a pretty complex issue, and I would be a little reluctant for us to take a hard position on it at this stage.
PK.
Yeah, I understand what Dave's trying to do, and I appreciate what Dave's trying to do, but I don't know, from what Terry's first question was, actually picking an alternative or actually helping him guide with some direction what that letter might say, as opposed to just, we don't like this one aspect of it. I don't know how much clout that will give them anyways coming from the council.
Tom?
Yeah, I understand the concerns expressed, and it's difficult or impossible to pick an alternative or preferred alternative or object to one that's when we're not looking at all the alternatives and some analysis. I do think it may be helpful to communicate our central concern that some of these alternatives will have detrimental impacts on New England's bluefin, targeted bluefin fleet, and that, you know, wherever possible, we should be looking to convert discards into landings, not bluefin targeted commercial landings into dead discards in another fishery. I mean, that's a high-level principle that I think we could all agree with, but I understand not, you know, outlining a specific opposition to a specific alternative without a full presentation and a general understanding of, you know, the details of that.
Dave?
Yeah, I appreciate all the comments, I do apologize because this was not what I wanted to do today. I had a completely different presentation lined up, and this sort of got dumped on me because I was not aware, because I wasn't here in September. I was off at NAFO, but I wasn't aware that this was coming up at this time and that it was so time sensitive. So in the last 2 days, I've been trying to reorganize things. I think Tom's approach is probably the best one. A more generic letter that says that we should be discouraging discards rather than encouraging them, something along that line.
Before we seek consensus on that, Rich?
Thanks very much, Mr. Chairman, and thanks everyone for around the table for indulging us here. And I'm the dumpy on David at the last minute, so it's, you can blame me and not him. He's done a great job in a very short period of time of trying to summarize the entire process and where we've been. And it is a complex process. Mike is absolutely right. He's participated in it from the delegation side to the domestic management side for many years, so he knows. But I think what Dave is trying to get at is there are a number of other alternatives in the amendment that can be used to reduce long-line discards. And the agency, in our view, has really taken a more easy way out, which is going after reallocation of quota. And that reallocation of quota is going to hurt New England fishermen who are tuna fishermen, who are groundfish fishermen, and who are lobster fishermen. And the amount of quota is quite substantial. Right now, for example, discards have gone from originally the longline fleet had a 74-ton base quota. Under the new alternatives, they'll have a 265-ton quota. It's almost a third of the U.S. allocation. They'll be second behind the general category. For the general category, which is our most important, we call it the heart and soul of the New England fishery, we're going to lose right off the top 32.1 tons of when quota is scarce. And in the last few years, we've been achieving our quota. For a few years, we didn't. But now it seems as though we're getting back to the point where quota will become scarce. We have a very detailed, restrictive management program in place that divides that quota up into seasonal quotas of the summertime quota, the fall quota. And we now have been allowing some, and one of the proposals in Amendment Number 7, and this is the document that Dave is basically talking about. This is just one. Even though it's a secretarial plan, it's not unlike the size and the volume of the plans the council's used to dealing with, including the environmental impact statements and the draft RIRs. But instead of what we've been asking the agency to do, what we told them from day one, and this started in June of 2011 when they came out with the specifications, is that we're not, most of us, being general category, harpoon category, angling category fishermen, are not responsible for this very large growth in discards. In 1 year alone, 2009, it peaked out at 238 metric tons of bluefin tuna thrown over the side by pelagic longliners because they didn't have quota to land it, and the fish were dead, so they were basically illegal. And the agency said, just as Dave has pointed out, the agency claims they didn't have the authority to shut that fishery down and stop that from happening once they reached their 74-ton landings allocation. We've disputed that because there has been that kind of a requirement in the purse seine fishery, and it's never been a problem. If they want to go fishing in other fisheries, they keep a minimum amount of bluefin available to do that. But specifically, where we think the agency has fallen down is in two areas. One of the major alternative management measures is closed areas, and Michael started to talk about that as well. And the two big areas that they're looking at that many scientists have been pushing, like Dr. Barbara Block, has been the Gulf of Mexico. The agency chose what they call, in the document, actually call it a small area in the Gulf of Mexico. And it basically, the way it is now, it'll say 51 bluefin tuna, 51 individual fish, which is a shame. I mean, compared to what has been asked for by a host of environmental groups, from Pew down to Block, down to a lot of other people. There are alternatives in there that would say you could say 56 metric tons if you just include the area and the time, the length of the closure and the breadth of the closure. Those have been rejected by the agency, and the preferred alternative is a tiny one because there's a yellowfin tuna fishery in there. But the impact analysis shows that the closure of the bluefin is primarily in a different area and a different time of the year than peak yellowfin tuna catches, so they could do that. The second area that's of major importance is the mid-Atlantic region, basically from the north, what started off as a North Carolina fishery up to Hatteras. And that's been a heavy bluefin tuna interaction is the word, the new word the agency's using for the long line fleet. So that has been bolstered somewhat. But yet at the same time, what the agency has decided to do, because it does have an impact upon the coastal long line fleet, not the offshore fleet, is to say, well, we're going to let what we determine to be the good guys. I think I'm going to be going on too long here, so I'm going to have to find a way to shorten this up. But they're going to allow the good guys, meaning the guys who have few interactions, and that's what you have in the long line fleet. Out of 120 boats, you've got some real bad actors that are responsible for as many as 400 bluefin tuna caught and killed each year to most of the boats, which are in the below 10 a year. And if you obviously it's easy to focus in on the big guys first, but there's not that many of them, and then it comes down to the basic fleet. But in that mid-Atlantic region, basically the proposal is to allow certain long line boats that have demonstrated an ability to stay away from bluefin while they're fishing in that area. But also it also allows another point, and that is anybody who's already met their bluefin individual vessel cap is going to be allowed to get into a general category permit, the same one most of our tuna fishermen have here in New England, and fish under the general category quota using New England just traditional general category quota shifted to the winter fishery, meaning January, February, March, April. And the way they're going to do that is one that's really quite insulting, if you have a right to be insulted in this business. They're proposing that they're going to look at our performance in the general category in the months of June, July, and August. And if in 1 year we don't catch our quota, what typically happens is we roll it to September and October and catch it. And like I said, the last 3 years we've caught our quota in the general category. But what the agency would do is just looking at the June through August, what they would call underperformance, the following year they're going to take that underage and make that available for basically what we call a new winter fishery. It's going to be beyond the North Carolina fishery. It's going to be now a fishery of the tradition. You can't call them traditional. They only started in the mid-1990s. But North Carolina fishermen are going to be joined by pelagic longline fishermen who either didn't get enough bluefin cap or already caught it in a given year, joining in that effort and basically moving in the direction of penalizing New England fishermen, whether we get a more restrictive bag limit throughout the summer season, or a shorter season, meaning limited number of days per week that we can fish. One way or another, the agency is going to make sure that the U.S. doesn't go over quota. So what Dave was getting at was the fact of the matter is this reallocation. The agency's reliance on reallocation alone is wrong. They need to go back and look at some of these other measures, including further work on weak hooks, which have demonstrated some good positive impacts in the Gulf of Mexico, have not been tried too seriously in the Atlantic. They've tried green stick fishing as an alternative in the Gulf of Mexico. That showed positive indications to stay away from bluefin. They could go back and do some more of that work. But there's a whole range of other alternatives they can do, but they're settling on this major upheaval of the traditional fishery. For example, they're taking away 75...
Could you sum things up?
You shut my mic off, doesn't it? to sum it up, that doesn't even happen at ICAT. To sum it up, what we're asking for is exactly what Dave suggested, a letter from this council indicating to NIMS that you're very concerned about the impact of reallocation of traditional northeast quota in the general harpoon and angling categories to solve the discard problem, and not to reallocate that quota away from New England because it has an impact on an area that's already been described as an economic disaster, and all of these fisheries are interrelated. Everybody in this room knows you can't be in New England and be a successful fisherman unless you're a multi-species fisherman. So thanks.
for that help.
Does anyone else from the audience want to speak? Okay, back to the council. What's your intent? Tom?
I know we're not in a position at all, given how this issue was brought up, to be specific about an alternative. I do think that, it's worth discussing whether we want to say we support ongoing efforts to increase accountability in these important fisheries. We're concerned about the possible negative impacts for New England's tuna fleet. We also support a thriving, profitable sword fleet. We recommend, if at all possible, we avoid converting landings into dead discards. We have concerns about that. And leave it there. I think that's probably elevated enough that we can all support it.
People comfortable with that approach? Doug?
Yeah, I would support that approach. I think that's general enough and gets at the concept that I think anything that we can do to encourage the reductions in dead discards without a reallocation would be, I think, beneficial.
Mike?
My concern about that approach is simply that I would presume that the agency's view about increasing the allocation to the longline fishery is so that they won't be forced to create dead discards and will have enough quota so that they can retain them. So you may be saying don't do exactly what they would say is the reason they're doing it. So I just put that on the table. But beyond that, I'm basically going to state at this point that as a basis of this conversation, I have come to the conclusion that I may have a perceived conflict of interest, so I will recuse myself from now on.
David.
Yeah, I support the concept, the approach. I think it makes a great deal of sense. I've heard enough regarding what the service intends to do to make me wonder what are they thinking. So I would hope that through this letter could say something along the lines of that when NIMS considers how to deal with dead discards in Amendment 7, preference be given to alternatives to reduce the pelagic long line dead discards instead of reallocating quota from the New England directed bluefin fishery to the longline fishery. And that's my sentiment. That's what I hope the letter, if indeed we send one, would reflect. Taking from a directed fishery to address dead discards is just not a very sensible way to go.
So, Dave, is the approach comfortable? Are you comfortable with this?
Oh, yeah,
approach?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It also points up one other thing, and that is that we have not, for almost 3 years, we had not engaged this. And I tried to pick this up as best I could at the very last moment. We need to re-engage because the fishery is an important fishery to New England. I've tried to stay up with ICAT, but the HMS stuff, I got blindsided on this one. So that can't happen.
Mary Beth?
Yeah, if people want to send the letter, I guess that's all right. But in general, I would say that this is bad practice. We don't have the document before us. We don't know what the rationale the agency's provided for their preferred alternative. And I think it's a really bad practice.
So with Mary Beth's counsel and Mike recusing himself, is there an objection to a general letter being sent? Seeing none, it shall be done. Okay, we're going to move on to our public comment section on items that are not on the agenda. I don't see, is Gary Hatch still here? Okay, next on the list is Peter Shelley. No, you're all set. Jeff Kalin.